at the outset, just because I want to make sure I get to it, but I see Bloom is not here. He wanted to know about this. Was the question of Heseba. The Gemara in Pesachim, speaking about Heseba, says that Prakdan Lav Shmei Heseba, that lying prone on one's back is not called Heseba. Now, you have to understand what Heseba is. What people do today, for the most part, is not Heseba. And I find it amusing, really, to have a discussion of whether or not it's good if you didn't do Heseba, the Chatzilah, when nobody does Heseba today, almost nobody does Heseba. If this is my chair, and I drink my wine like this, it's very nice, but that's not called Heseba. That's not what Heseba was, and that's not what Heseba is. If you look back to the Talmudic period, the definition of Heseba was you lay on a bed. And that's the way the royalty used to eat. And you look at the story of Esther. People would lie on a bed on their sides, and they would have the taka, they would have the tray in front of them. Now you also understand, we eat on a table. We don't have the little tray before us normally. But if you eat on a bed, that's normally what you're going to do. So you look in the Gemara in Daf Kuf Chesam and Aleph in Perek Arvei Pesachim, and the Gemara says as follows: Praktan lo shmei Heseba. Lying prone is not called Heseba. Heseba is yomin, lo shmei Heseba. Lying on your right is not called Heseba. V'lo od, ela shema yakdim kon elevation. Not only that, but it's dangerous as well. Now, traditionally, but the way this is commonly read and taught is Prakdan is din A. Hasebas Yamin is din B. And not only is leaning on your right side not Haseba, but it's dangerous as well. And why? Because the way the epiglottis opens, the windpipe is on the right side, the esophagus is on the left side, and you're more likely to choke if you're leaning on your right side. Now, going back to yesterday's discussion, this particular approach is patently absurd. Now, it's absurd for us to adopt this in the 20th century. Maybe it wasn't absurd to adopt this 300 years ago. It is patently false. The trachea and windpipe are back-to-back. The epiglottis does not open right to left. And leaning this way, and even if it's on a bed, which is real estate, and leaning this way, one is no more prone to choke one way or the other. Now, what exactly did the Gemara mean? So the Rashbam here quotes two interpretations. One is the one that I just suggested, which I think is really untenable. The second interpretation he writes, Shema Yakdim, he writes, Apraktan Koi. That goes back on the first din in the Gemara. Shemitoch Shet Savaro Shochel Achorav, Shafui Kova Asosem Espiakana Niftach, Umiskapa Lamala, Vakana Poshet Lamala, Vamachal Nichnas Bova Nechnach. That's what he quotes from Rashi. And then he asks Akasha, why wasn't it on with the previous statement? And then he goes on to say that the right-left thing. He quotes Rabosai Pershu. Okay? Rashi, that he's quoting, I don't know if we have it in our Rashi, or if it's really our Rashi, that is now our Rashi. Rashi's right. If you are doing Heseba, lying on a bed, imagine yourself lying flat back and trying to eat. What's going to happen? You know. Going to choke. It will take no time whatsoever for you to choke. I don't know if babies have something different about their epiglottis. They can eat, lying, drink their bottle lying flat. I don't think drinking is that much better than eating. A person is going to choke if they lie on their back and eat. Now, what's the business of yamin? Why is prakhtan lo shmei Heseba? Well, that's not called leaning. Okay? That's called lying down. Heseba is yamin's lo shmei Heseba. Why? Because most people are lefties, are righties. And if you are a righty, the way you eat when you do Heseba is it's not perm, otherwise I'd do a demonstration on the table for you. You lie down on the thing, you have the taka in front of you, and you eat with your right hand. If you are a righty and you lean on this side, it's a little, for most of us who are not that ambidextrous, it's very difficult to eat. I suggest that you just go home to eat soup. Okay, you're going to have soup, Le'al Seder, if you do. Okay, so almost everybody has chicken soup. I challenge you to eat the soup, the spoon, with your left hand. Okay, if you're a righty, if you're a lefty, do it the other way. And let's see how much you get in your mouth and how much spills before you get to your mouth. So you'll understand why Hasebes Yom and Lashme Hasebe. Now, there is a nafgamina between these two interpretations. The nafgamina is if you're a lefty. If the issue is Shema Yachtim Kana Levesha, even though lefties are the only ones in their right mind, the anatomy of their esophagus and trachea, that I think it's a safe bet to say, in fact, are the same, no matter what. In fact, I think you could argue that based, if you want to really be pupilistic, that when they talk about determining whether someone's a lefty or a righty, so how do you determine whether a lefty or righty? Ultimately, we settle on what you write with. That's the normal determination. Whether you're an Iter Yad Yamin or you're a Yamini. But the truth is, there would have been a much better criteria if there are anatomical differences. Just ask the person to open his throat. You'll see the way his condensation are arranged, and that's how you would decide which way his epiglottis opens, and done. Okay, that's something you could have seen. That's, you know, almost external. Obviously not. There's no. If you hold the reason of Shem Yachin Kana Leveshet, then you always lean on your left side. If you hold the issue that Shem Yachin Kana Leveshet is talking about Prakton, and Hasebes Yom and Lashme Hasebes, just because that's the way you eat, so then... So in that case, then a lefty should lean on his right side, because a lefty presumably would eat with his left hand. Any lefties here? And how do you eat your soup? Your left hand, okay. Yes, that's your primary hand. Okay, the rest of us eat soup with our, the rest of the righties eat soup with our right hands, right? And there's a reason for that. So anyway, when you look in Shulchan Aruch, there's a very famous sheet of the Rav Yehuda. The Rav Yehuda already writes that you don't need to do Haseba, because it's not Derech Malachim anymore. And I suppose that's true probably in the medieval period already. They probably ate at tables. You know, one would argue that if you wanted to have the equivalent of Ben Chorin, you should sit on a nice chair. You know, if it's a, you know, ideally if everybody could have an armchair, you know, for, you can't obviously, but, or it's pretty difficult, but if everybody could have an armchair, so then that would be called Derech Chorin. I mean, there's no din to do that though. But the Rav Yehuda says you don't need to do Haseba. Now, we don't generally rely upon the Ramah, on the Rav Yehuda outright, but the Rechaber quotes in Shulchan Aruch that if you didn't do Haseba, so that you have to go back and you have to eat the matzah again, you have to drink the wine again. And the Rama already writes that, number one, our Nashim who don't do Haseba, and the Gemara says that if Isha doesn't do Haseba, unless of course she's an Isha Chashuva, and I believe the Rama already comments there, all of our Nashim are Nashim Chashuvos, and all of your mothers and sisters are Nashim Chashuvos. Okay? So, but then nonetheless, the Rama writes, apparently the Minhag, the women weren't in the year, besides they rely upon the Rav Yehuda. And b'di'eved, also you don't have to go back and eat, you can rely upon the Rav Yehuda. Although he talks about which kosas, the first, last two, since you can't drink in between them, and you shouldn't drink after them, you don't do it all, whereas the first two you could. I think the Achron already say you don't go back and do that. Now, the Rav Yehuda, I would argue, is really coming from a position of the fact that it's not, Haseba is no longer in vogue among Malachim. But I would argue even from a different angle, what we do, and the Rav Yehuda probably may have meant this as well, we don't do, what we're doing is not Haseba. Yeah. I would just add, and here I acknowledge, I don't know if it's really the Ramah, it's in parentheses in the Ramah type print in Shulchan Aruch, says that Iter Yad Yamin leans on his left, just like everybody else. If you ask me, Reb Shach Halach, I would tell the lefties they should be leaning on the, I mean, it's not doing a save anyway, so it doesn't really matter what you do in your chairs. But you should be leaning on your right. Because it's no, in my mind, there's absolutely no question. Scientific Metzias is absolutely clear. That the first, that the interpretation of Rashi is correct. There's no greater issue of Shema Yachin Kana Leveshet on the left side and the right side. And in a choice of interpreting the Gemara, I prefer not to have the Gemara be wrong in terms of its Metzias than in order to defend a certain position in Rishonim. And therefore, I believe the lefty should lean on the right side. Now, it's certainly even more the case practically. I said this before, I had the last year for the first time, God willing, again this year. You know, I have the big couch, my wife has the smaller couch, and Noam is. Noam has the toddler bed that he no longer sleeps in, but I can bring that down. And that's how we had the Seder last year, and that's what we'll have to say the Easter. Nadav is not Shayach. He can stay in his access officer. But that is, if one is going to do a Seba, that's the way you do a Seba. Sitting in a chair is not a Seba. Makes you feel good, okay, just tell me you should lean, it doesn't hurt. What's that? We do it in the living room. So you just cover, you know, you cover it with a sheet or something, you don't want to spill on the couch. It's very nice. What's that?
Do you wear toga?
Look, Steen, if you come for the Seder, I'll put on a toga. Okay. Anyway, I think that the Rav Yoh is unquestionably correct in terms of that's not what people do, but more to the point, what we do is not called Haseba. That's just not. I mean, you can pretend it is, but it's not what Haseba is. And, you know, someone said to me, I forget who says, he finds it very uncomfortable to do it that way. But, I mean, I would say if a person is really physically discomfort, he should rely upon the rabbi and not lean, because it's supposed to be derech eruv, and if it's painful, then it's really counterproductive. So anyway, in that case, I think one should rely upon the rabbi. I don't think for most of us, you put a pill there, it's, you know, it's lamal of lamorid. It's kind of, it feels silly, but more than that, okay, so whatever. Is there a question? Okay. Anyway, that is far as the seba. The other issue I wanted to talk about before I start at the beginning, one more issue, was the question of halal. I've had a little bit of chance to look into this. The halal material at the end is somewhat confusing. The one thing that's clear is that after Birchas Hamazon, you complete the halal hamitzri. There are three halals in Chazal's tradition. What are the three halals? One is Halal HaMitzri, which is Tehillim Yud Gimel through Kuf Yud Ches. There are differing opinions in Chazal as to when. I mean, that terminology itself is a makes certain assumptions. There are different opinions in Chazal when the Shira there was created. One opinion was that the Jews said it when they were Olam in Hayam, hence the term Halal HaMitzri. That obviously stems from Hayam Rav Hayanos and all that material in Mizmar Kuf Yud Daled. On the other hand, there is a tradition in Chazal, if I'm not mistaken, that it was said by Chizkiah after the time of Sancheiriv. The Malbim quotes this Medrash in his introduction to Tehillim. Obviously, the implications of that is that not all of Tehillim is Davidic, which the Malbim is willing to allow in his introduction there. That is one Hallel. The second Hallel is known as Hallel HaGadol, which is... There are a number of opinions, actually, that are cited. I don't remember if it's in the Bavli Yerushalmi. The number of opinions of what constitutes Halal HaGadol, but the accepted opinion is that Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav, all the Hodul Hashem Kito Kilom, all the Kilom Chastos, that Mizmor. And there was a third Halal Psukei de Zimra. Okay? So, on Leil HaSeder, so everybody, I think all Mosfos have immediately following Berchas HaMazon, begin Halel, the second part of Halel HaMitzri. Now, in terms of where we draw the break, that's a machlokes beis Shammai, beis Hillel, in the Mishnah. The accepted opinion, I think beis Shammai's opinion is the first paragraph, Ein Abanim Smecha, and beis Hillel's opinion is that you split into the middle of the next, is the next Mizmar split also? Which is the third one that's already. So, according to Beis Hillel, you read Kuf Yud Daled as well. And while I'm at it, let me just point out the correct pronunciation of the word in that second parak is Eloah. There are two issues to be considered here. Number one, how you pronounce the hey at the end of the word. The hey at the end of the word is supposed to be pronounced the same way you pronounce a ches with a patach at the end of the word and an ein with a patach at the end of the word. Nobody says nocha or rucha or kocha. Everybody says ruach and noach and koach, because that is called a patach genuva. Now, most of us, I don't know, Eitan, if you pronounce an ayin, but if you don't pronounce an ayin, then you don't realize that when you have something like Yehoshua or Lehania with an ayin at the end, what you were really supposed to be doing is pronouncing an aleph before the ayin and a shva under the ayin. Just as if I wanted to show you a phonetic pronunciation of the name Noach, I would put nun cholam, aleph with a patach, and ches with a shva or nothing underneath it. And that's how you would get Noach. Now, the same thing is true with Yehoshua. There's presumably a patach kanuva. For the moment, but I'll change that in a second, we'll call that an aleph with a patach there. And the same thing is true with a hey with a patach at the end, when there is a patach under, there is a mapik in the hey. A mapik in the hey, the way it's marked at the end of a word is with a dot in the middle, it's not a dagesh. The way it's marked in the middle of the word is with a shva underneath it. If there's no shva underneath a hey in the middle of the word, it's silent. If there is a shva, it's a mapik. So for example, it's Gamliel ben Pidatzur, the hey is completely silent, there's nothing under the hey. However, it's Pidahel ben Amihud, because there's a shva under the hey. So coming to the end of the word, when you have a mapik in the hey, it means it's pronounced. So if you have a word like gavoa, okay, it's not gavoha, It's a patach genuva with a hey pronoun. So it's gavo ah. Okay, aleph and an amapake after it. Okay. So that is, so the word should pronounce milafnei adon chil haaretz milafnei eloah Yaakov. Now, the second issue, which is not clear, which is correct, although I think most of us pronounce it one way, and that's probably the correct way, is the question of what is that, what consonant do you pronounce for that patach? Now, I just told you could spell it Noach, right, with a patach under an aleph. Now, but that's not how most of you pronounce it. What letter, what consonant do you put in with that patach when you normally say the word? No. Vav. But you're pronouncing the vav the way it was originally pronounced, which is a wa. You say Noach, you say Yoshua. That's if it's a patach vowel. That's the effect that you get. If it happens to be a chirik or a tzera, that's a patach ashuruk. If you have a chirik or a tzera, like reach, what consonant are you putting there?
No.
Well, that's if you pronounce it reach. But if you don't make that very hard, that you're pronouncing a yud in there. And if you look at the Mincha Shai and Yehi Rakia, right at the beginning of Brachos, he presents two opinions. One that is pronounced with an aleph, a glottal stop, and the other that it's pronounced either as a vav or a yud. And you can see how he pronounced vav. He pronounced it as wa, which is the Arabic pronunciation and probably the original Hebrew pronunciation. So the question is it a lo ah or a lo wa? And I think it's the latter, but you could argue for either one. But it's not a lo ha. That hey, the patach is not under the hey, it's a patach genuva. And just as you wouldn't say nocha, you shouldn't say eloha either. Anyway, coming back to the halel business, so it's a machlokas when you stop. Okay, we stop after two paragraphs. Now, interestingly enough, what is missing? Now he comes in after I talk about haseva. Okay. What about a bracha before halel? Do we make a bracha before halel? And that's it? Really? In your family Seder, they do?
Oh, no.
The brach. So there is a machlokas. The Ran quotes in the Daf Arif, there were a number of Rishonim who held, and you find it in some Nuschos and Haggadah, that they used to make a bracha, the Ligmaras HaHalel or the Kroas HaHalel, before beginning the mismore, those Mismorim. After you have an Omar Lefanav Shirach HaDasha HaLuka, so then you make a bracha. The Gaonim, however, insisted strongly that you do not make any such bracha. And that's a question why. Why? Normally you have to start with a bracha. Now, they did say halal and shul, but if the argument is going to be that you said halal and shul, hence no need for a bracha, there should be no bracha afterwards either. So you look at the Ran. He tries to come up with some type of an explanation that basically the bracha afterwards is not really a bracha on after the mitzvah. It's not an ending to a hypothetical first bracha. You know, Yehalucha, the last paragraph we say in Hallel on a regular Hallel day, is really not a sort of concluding bracha, but it's a bracha of Shira. But somehow it's a different kind of bracha, and somehow that doesn't require these rules that, you know, every bracha has to be posachas b'barach unless it's a bracha smucha l'chaverta. But there was a tradition among some Rishonim that they should in fact say a bracha before. Our practice is not to do so. And what about the brachos afterwards? What about the business afterwards? So you would have expected, if you were going... Well, you have a lot of stuff. After you finished Halal HaMitzvah, you finished Mismar Kuf Yud Ches, Hodu L'Hashem Ki Totun Chasto, and I'll make a comment in that context as well. I don't know if this is against the Shulchan Aruch or not, but the practice in saying Halal Lefi Aniyas Dati, the way most people do it, is ridiculous. People who say Hodu L'Hashem Ki Totun Chasto, then they say, after the Chazan says it, they say Hodu, and then they say Yomar Na, and then they say Hodu, and they say Yomar Na, and they say Hodu, and then they say Yomar, and they say Hodu. In my opinion, that's completely ridiculous. You pick one of two options. The way the Halal was originally decided, the classic perhaps Makre Es HaHalal, is you had the opening stanza of Hodu L'Hashem Ki Totun Chasto, and then the Makre would repeat the Kore Es HaHalal, I should say, Makre would be repeat after him. The Kore would read a pasuk and everybody would respond, Hodu L'Hashem Ki Totun Chasto. And he would read another pasuk and everybody would respond, Hodu L'Hashem Ki Totun Chasto, throughout the entire Mizmor. You look in the Gemara and Sukkah, and that is, I think, amply clear. In which case, it really seems to me there are two choices here. Even if you don't do it for the entire Mizmor, either you respond to the Chazan each time and you just say, Hodu L'Hashem Ki Totun Chasto, or you just say the Pasuk after the Chazan, Yomar Na, Yomar Na, and Yomar Na. Not that you say that and Hodu. It just makes absolutely no sense. That's the way, the best of my knowledge, that that's the only logical way is to do one of the two. It makes more sense just to say the pasuk because we don't do it through the entire mizmar, but that was the point, that the mizmar starts with Hodu Lashem Kitom Chasdo. You might not remember with all the singing by the time you get to the end and you say the Halukah, and of course you forget that the Halukah is not part of Tehillim, that the mizmar starts with Hodu Lashem and it ends with Hodu Lashem. Okay. And only once. The doubling is only our liturgical practice. Yes. Yeah, but people say, no, but they say Hodu after the last one, and then they say the next phrase before the Chazan. That's the way they do it. But it doesn't, I know, but it doesn't make any sense.
Why not?
But the Chazan, when the Chazan does it on Slichos and that type of a thing, the Piyutim, so you say it before the Chazan, but you say it and he says it. And as if you were to look at your Amira, you say it all through, and that's all you say. And he says it all through. But here, you end up both acting responsibly to the Chazan, and at the same time saying it yourself. That doesn't make any sense. If you're being Yotzi with an effect of another, I don't want to call it a Shomea Ka'one, but you know, you're the chorus that responds to the Chazan's call the Pasuk, then you should be saying the Pasuk. If you're going to say the Pasuk, there's no need to be the chorus to respond to him.
So you get to do both. You get to do the chorus and you get to say it yourself.
I know, but the point is that you're supposed to, the chorus is instead. Well, that's the way they did things. And those are the two ways you have, the two traditions you have in Mach. You have Korei Sahalel, one situation where they respond, you know, with the same stanza over and over to each piece. And the other way is he says a pasuk, then they say a pasuk. Right? You don't do both. That practice is not found. We just look at the way it's presented in the Gemara of the different formats of Kriya, and they're different formats. You don't mix the two. So I'm not going to come and attack you if you do, but I think it makes no sense. Okay, so anyway, so then after you finish Mizmar Kuf Yud Ches, then what do we have most of your Haggadahs? What comes next? No. I don't think so.
No,
you have the Halal Haggadah. You have Hodu Lashem Kitom Chasdo until Nosein Lechem Lechol Basar Kilom Chasdo. Lechol Chasdo, Hodu Lekal Shemayim Kilom Chasdo. That you say Halal Haggadah, Mizmar Kuf Lamed Vav. Then what do you say? Then you say Nishmas, and something you should understand about Nishmas. Forgetting about its exact origins, where does Nishmas start and where does Nishmas end? I'll help you on the first question. Nishmas begins Nishmas Kochai. Where does Nishmas end? Melech Kelchei Olamim. That's the end of Nishmas. You should be aware of this on Shabbos in general, that if you're skipping, because if you come in late and you need to catch up, Nishmas is not a breakable up unit. If for some reason you're not going to say it, you'll start with Yishtabach. But Nishmas is part of, is the Birchas Hashira, it's part of Yishtabach. And therefore, if you don't have sufficient time, but you're going to say, maybe you should say Nishmas because it's part of Yishtabach on Shabbos, then make sure you say the entire thing. You don't start in the middle. You don't start with Shochenat. David?
What about during the week?
No, that's the Birchas Hashira during the week. On so Gedizim is much shorter during the week. We don't. I arguably you could just say Yishtabach, but it makes no sense to start at Shochenat.
Where did the brackets break it up between the Chazanim come from?
I don't know. I don't. That's a, it's a good question, but I don't know. I'm not sure. Goldschmidt in his it's in print now. It's very kedai to get. Goldschmidt's Machzor has been reprinted, and he quotes those who suggested that Nishmas was actually many, many different, like six or seven different short Birchos Hashira, different versions of what Birchos Hashira was, and they all were just amalgamated, put together. And he says that that's a very questionable thesis, whether that's in fact really true. Why Chazanim broke it up there beats me. I don't think he discusses that issue. So anyway, then you have that. Now, at some point, you also have, what else do you have in there? You have your Halalucha, the last piece of the Halal, and in some of your Machzor, in some of your Haggadahs, you have the Bracha of Melach Mehula Batishpachos, and then you'll have sometimes Nishmas following that, and then you'll have Kel Melach Gadol Batishpachos, Kel Zadnathos Abachavishes, Melach Kachay Olamin. You have your Shtabach with its Bracha. Now, where does this machlokas originate from? So the Gemara in Pesachim, the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, And you're often, this is why you're practically wondering what are you supposed to say. So the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Ches Amid Beis, Kuf Yud Zayin Amid Beis, excuse me, says, Mazgulo Kashlishi Mevarech HaMazona, Revi, Gomer Alav Esahelo, Va'omer Alav Birchas Hashir. He says, Birchas Hashir. Okay. Now the Gemara says, My Birchas Hashir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yehalalucha Hashem Elokeinu. That's our ending typically on a regular Hallel. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Nishmas Kol Chai. So you have a Lachlokas HaMarayim here as to what is the Birchas Hashir. What is the Birchas Hashir that's supposed to follow the Hallel? Now there is already immediately a Machlokas HaRishonim already in the Balei HaTosos, Rashbam against Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen. As to what Rabbi Yochanan's opinion was when he said Nishmas Kochai. Rabbi Chaim HaKohen's opinion, which I think is the standard opinion of Chachmei Sfarad, is that Rabbi Yochanan was arguing what it was, and he held, no, it's not Halalucha, it's Dafka Nishmas Kochai. But the Rashbam, and other the Balei Tosafot of the opinion, is that Rabbi Yochanan's opinion was Af Nishmas Kochai. You're supposed to say both. You're supposed to say both. Which means that according to the Rashbam, you're actually supposed to make two chasimos. Now presumably, and the way he describes it, the way this breaks down conceptually, is that you have two halals here. You have halal ha-mitzri, and that you can finish up with the standard yehalalucha. And then you have halal ha-gadol, and that can be completed, that can have its birchas hashir, nishmas kohai. And you will see remnants of that in some of our printed ha-gadas. Most of the Rishonim, however, held, and that practice continued in Ashkenaz, but most of the Rishonim, particularly Chacham Esfarad, held it was one or the other. I believe the standard line, maybe we'll see it in the Rambam, maybe we won't, I don't know if he quotes it, is Jehalalucha. It's the standard Chasim of Hallel. But it's always one or the other. And eventually, that was the Torah's opinion, that eventually won out. I don't remember, but I think if you look in the Rambam, did anyone see the Rambam here? I bet you the Ramah says, I wouldn't be surprised if it says you can say either one, but you don't say both. Maschil alone of the Gomer Lavas Halas and Chaber, Vein Omer Yhalalucha, Ala Omer Achar Gemar Halal, Halal Hagado, Shu Mehud Vulashem. Ad al Naros Bavel, Shem Chavav, Kilom Chastav, Achakach Omer Nishmas Kochai Bishtabach, Amelom Ve'arolam Atakel, Ve'oz Yomar Yihalalucha, Ad Melech Molo Batishpachos, Ve'shoseo Be'seba B'lo Bracha Tchila. Okay.
The
Mishnah Berurah quotes the other opinion, but I think it's clear you don't say both. That already becomes the accepted practice. Here the Mechaber is incorporating the opinion of Chachmei Sfarad. The Raman Perisha Mishnayos?
You can say one, and if you want to see the other one, substitute.
No, but is he saying both at the same time, or you can substitute one? Second, let me see what he has at the end. In the Mishnah Torah, he doesn't mention anything at all. Okay. There he doesn't mention anything. Anyway, so your practice should be to recite one or the other, but not both. It's a little confusing because the Haggadahs sometimes print both brachas. But the order the Shulchan Aruch gives is probably advisable, and I think the Mishnah Berurah may say you can recite either bracha. Now, one other very interesting issue that emerges from this, which is the question of the fifth kos. The fifth kos, everybody knows where the fifth kos, Koshel Aliyahu. You look at the Gemara and Daf Kofir Chesem and Aleph, where's the marker for saying Halal HaGadol? Tana Rabbanan on the second line, Revi'i, Gomer Alavas HaHalal V'Omer Halal HaGadol Divrei Rabbi Tarfa. And then V'yesh Omim HaShem Ro'i Lo Echsar, and then you have a discussion of Mehechan Halal HaGadol, different opinions. Now, this is the way it appears in the printed Vilna Shas, and this is the way it appears in Ksav Yad Munich and in two other Kisvei Yad. However, if you look in the majority of the Kisvei Yad, and if you look in clearly the discussion of almost all the Rishonim, and it's also evidenced by the fact that the Rashbam begins the section Hachi Garcinan Tan Rabban Ravi Gomer Lavas Ahalo Gomer Lahala Gadol, and you know when he says Hachi Garcinan, he has been busy amending the text. So the girsa was Tana Rabbanan Kos Hamishi Mivarach Alav Hal Hagadol Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. Now there is a machlokus between the Baal HaMor and most of the other Rishonim, between Baal HaMor versus the Rif and the Ramban and the Ravid in the Sefer HaSchos, what Rabbi Tarfon's opinion was. The Baal HaMor saw that there's a machlokus between Rabbi Tarfon and Tana the Mishnah, and we obviously paskin that there is no Kos Hamishi. However, most of the Rishonim say that no, Rabbi Tarfon is only talking about a Kos Hamishi Shel Rishus. It's all he was talking about. It's not a mandatory Kos, it's an optional Kos. I would wonder, I don't know if our Kos Shel Eliyahu in some ways became a Gilgul, no pun intended there, as a substitute for the original Kos Hamishi, that there was. But there is such a thing as a Kos Hamishi. And if a person is going to do Kos Hamishi, arguably there, I forget who says this, there might be room, more logically, to make a bracha. Because if you think about it, the Gemara points out that even though the chiyuv of Arba Kosos is an independent chiyuv, nonetheless, each one is attached to a mitzvah. The first kos is attached to Kiddush, the second kos is attached to Magi, the third kos is attached to Brachas HaMazon, and the fourth kos is attached to Hallel. So if one has a fifth kos, it's logical to think why someone might perhaps have another bracha, a different Brachas HaShir, that should be appended to that. In effect, that was what the Rashbam Shita, who held that there were only four kosos, and this, by the way, was a very strong sheet of Chachmei Ashkenaz, who held that it was usher to drink after the fourth kos. Chachmei Sfarad did not hold that way. They held you could be marbi, one more kos afterwards, that wasn't the problem. But Rashbam's position is basically without the chasimus, the Baruch Hashem itself, the way you break things down should be, and I think we don't do it this way, but it should be you finish Halal HaMitzri, then you say Halalucha, then you say Halal HaGadol, and then you say Nishma. So each Halal, each of the two Halals, has its own Birchas Hashir, but you don't make the Chasima, on Halalucha, you make the Chasima at the end of your Shtabach. Okay. Now, on to the Haggadah itself. The Rambam writes at the beginning of Perek Zayin of Hilchos Chametz Umatzah, Mitzvah Saseh Shel Torah, the Saper B'Nisan, and the Flo Shanasu Lavosein B'Mitzrayim, Below Chamisha Asar B'Nisan, Shenemar Zachoras Yom Hazer Shnei Tosemi Mitzrayim, Kimo Shenemar Zachoras Yom HaShabbos.
You're in Perek Shvi.
Perek Shvi. The Rambam says that the mitzvah is to be misaper benisim v'niflos shenasu lavoseinu b'mitzrayim. Later in the perek, he writes halacha hey, kol mi shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu b'lel chamish asa lo yatsi yedei chovasa v'elu hein pesach matzah mar. And he goes on to quote the psukim v'advar udvar me'elu kulan nikran hagadah. Now you notice here the Rambam seems to identify, well, what does it mean, lo yotze de chovasa? So most Rishonim say it means you're not yotze de chiyuv haggadah, but it doesn't mean you're not yotze at all, it means you're not yotze properly. And there is a shita, I think it's the Ramban, but I don't know where it is, I can't find it, who holds, no, it's nothing to do with haggadah. If you don't say these things, you're not yotze properly, the mitzvah of achilas matzah, of achilas mor, and the zman shebeis hamikdashkayim of achilas pesach. Meaning it's not enough. It's a kind of hyper mitzvah strichas kavana, right? And hence the origin for the Hasidisha practice of Hinei Muchanu Mezuman, right? Now, but seriously, the point is if you want to be yotze in mitzvah matzah b'shleimuso, I'm sure he says this or somebody says this, it has to be lechem only. It has to be lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbe. That's part of the mitzvah, is not just to eat the matzah, but also to describe what the purpose of the mitzvah is. But the way the Rambam reads it, it's part of the mitzvah Haggadah. And there really seem to be two very different emphases here. One is on the history of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Nisim v'Niflaos, and the other is a more Lithuanian approach, is about the Halachos of Leil HaSeder, the Mitzvah Sachila, why do that? Now, we'll focus on what is the Mitzvah Matzah, what is the Mitzvah Mara, what is the Mitzvah Karban Pesach. If you look, in fact, it's interesting because these two stories, these two opinions, two foci seem to be mirrored in the two versions of a braisa, not two versions, but two different stories that we find. One is found in the Haggadah and nowhere else, and one is found in Tosefta Pischa, it's found in Tosefta Pesachim. The one that's found in the Haggadah is Maaseh, the Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, the Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfum, and Rabbi, who was the last one? Rav Losa ben Azaria, Shaya Mesubim, B'mene Brach, Vayim Misafim, Tzias Mitzrayim, Kala Laila, Achebo, Talmideim, Vamul Lahem, you know, so that's time, you know, Giazman, Zman Kriyashma. So that, you look at the description there, they're being misafir there about Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's what they're doing all night. Now that Braisa, and it's a Braisa, that Braisa is known to us from nowhere else in rabbinic literature. We don't know it from anywhere else. It's only found in the Haggadah. And that is a source. That is the source. It's not unique. There are other parts of the Haggadah also we don't know from elsewhere. I always point out to people who never learned Medrash Halacha, everybody's learned Medrash Halacha when you read the Haggadah. Now, V'higadta Levincha, Yachom Erosh Chodesh, that's from the Mechilta. On the other hand, Arami Oved Avi, if you look in the Sifrei, in the Medrash Tanam Lezvarim, there's almost nothing there. The Medrash Halacha on Arami Oved Avi, we know primarily from the Haggadah. Okay, and then this source about the Seba b'Evnei Brach is known to us only from the Haggadah. There's nothing, as far as I know, anywhere in the Midrashei Halacha.
You said Ram talks about Nitzim Nifloat, and the second thing is Halacha?
Well, Halacha Aleph is Mitzvah Seishal Torah L'Saper B'Nitzim Nifloat Shanaf Seim Sarvelach HaMisha Asar. And this is, and then he quotes the Pasuk. This is Sipur Yitzis Mitzrayim. Then he has a lot of details in between, and then he gets to the end. Halacha, he says, "Kol mishalom amar shlosh dvarim elu esnei chavaso," and he closes the halacha stating, "Udvarim ha'elu kulon nikroin hagada."
Okay.
I presume he means that's part of the mitzvah sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a very different emphasis. Now, when you look in the Tosefta in Psachim, I don't have it handy. Yeah, I do. One second. Maaseh ben Gamliel. It's Tosefta Psachim, Perek Yud, Mishnah Yud Beis. Maaseh Rabbi Gamaliel is the kingdom Shayim Mesubim beBeis Baitis Ben Zunim beLod beLod v'Hayu Asukim beHilchos HaPesach Kol HaLaila Ad Kros HaGever Higibim L'Fnei V'Noadu V'Hochot Lahan beBeis HaMedrash. There are common denominators and there are differences, but the one to me that I'm interested that stands out the most is v'Hayu Asukim beHilchos HaPesach. This is a Lithuanian Seder. Okay, the Bnei Brak was the Hasidish Seder, and Lod was the Lithuanian Seder. The question is, one was being Mesaper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the other was being Mesaper B'Hilchos HaPesach. Okay, in effect, what is implied by the last Mishnah, Af Atam Amarlo in Maftirin Achar Pesach Afikoman, which Reb Chaim took as the guidance, but it's not that you have to read the Mishnah this way, that after the Seder was done, he would stay up all night learning Hilchos Pesach. I would comment that I know there are many who do stay up Shavuos night. It's not my practice, but if one really wants to do with proper mitzvah, and you're going to stay up one night a year, stay up Lel Pesach, don't stay up Lel Shavuos. Lel Pesach is when you really might have a real Kiyum Doraisa, especially according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion that Zman Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Zman Pesach is Alalos HaShachar, which some Rishonim, even though we're Machmir, many Rishonim will make it, and that's the way we hold. So if you're going to stay up one night a year, make it Lel Pesach, not Lel Shavuos. I mean, it's very nice to stay up Lel Shavuos, but it's a very nice Kabbalistic custom. It's a much more recent phenomenon. But Lel Pesach is really, that's real Judaism. Yes, okay. What else to describe it? Yes, Eitan.
And nowadays, still the Haggadah is the same. So much of the Haggadah is talking about how to do Magid, how you tell the Arab Banim, how other Chachamim did at one point.
What is the core of the Haggadah?
I'm saying
the Haggadah has been built up. The Haggadah is now frozen. The printing press has frozen a lot of things. Technology has, ironically. People view it as an advance, but in fact technology has contributed in many ways to the freezing of halacha and the freezing of many things. It's a much longer discussion, not for now. One of the more benign, maybe it's benign effects of technology is the printing press has sort of frozen text, frozen the Haggadah, and therefore we don't really add to the Haggadah anymore. Nothing. Once upon a time, what might have been expansions on the Haggadah gradually accrued to the Haggadah. Nothing more really accrues to our Haggadahs. Well, what is the core of the Haggadah? What is the core of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? See, it's hard to see the two elements that the Rambam speaks about, the L'Saper B'Nisan Neflos and Pesach Matzamor, because there's a lot of static. There's a lot of static. The core of the Haggadah is Arami Oved Avi, the Medrashan Arami Oved Avi. That's the core of the Haggadah, at least the part A. Then you have Rabbi Gamliel's Kol Shalom HaShalosh Dvarim Elu B'Pesach.
But even
those are really the two pieces.
But looking at it as it is now, the Girsot are now, even now, half of the Haggadah is talking about the mitzvah of Haggadah, the halachic parts of...
I don't think half of the Haggadah is that way. I think most of it...
The meal, for example, is...
You have at the beginning, you have a little bit. I mean, it's not... Abadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim, me'ever hanar yeshuva v'sechem e'olam, that's not. So you have...
Abadim hayinu is why we're doing it.
No, Avadim Hayinu Lefaro probably starts. That's starting. That's Maskil Bignus. That's part of that God that you have
no,
to describe.
No, Mitzchila is the beginning of the story.
What's that?
Mitzchila of the Avodah Zarah.
No, that's a Mach... All right, let me just state that from the answer. Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, what is the beginning of the God that we happen to do both? But you have to realize those are two alternative beginnings. That those who wanted to read...
No, but...
Those who want the Rav, they quote in the name of the Rav that he wanted to say there was no Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, but the Rishonim understood there was a Machlokas. Rabbeinu Chananel, who said Paskins, well, I forget who we Paskins like, clearly held there was a plugta between the two of them, they didn't agree. But our practice is to incorporate both. But you have to see them sort of as, you know, two alternative introductions, and those are both about our history.
But are
you read the Mitzrayim, and are you read the Bimitzrayim? So yeah, there are pieces in there. The Keneged Arba Bonim might be sort of really how to do the Mitzvah Haggadah. Yochol Meirosh Chodesh, that Brisa is a piece of that. But the Ruba is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the Ikar, anyway, the kernel, the core, is Arami Obed Avi. There are parts in our Haggadah that look like that are part of it, but they are sort of optional additions. That piece that I've never understood about, you know, the one-upsmanship on the Makos, that's one of the Tosefkas to the Haggadah, as well as Dayenu. The Rambam does not have in his Haggadah, but be aware, even though he doesn't have in his Haggadah, Rav Avraham ben Arambam testifies that his father used to say it. It already is around from the Gaona period. If you go to one of the Gaonim, it appears in the Tosefta, or Sadigon or Pygon or something like that. It's there, but it's sort of optional. Alright, so anyway, but you seem to have these two different foci of what Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about the Nisa and the Flows, or is it supposed to be about Hilchos HaPesach? And our Haggadah in some ways is really an amalgamation of both, but clearly the much greater emphasis. The much greater emphasis is really on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. In order to be Yotzei Shita Shrabim Gamliel, so we say, Kol Shalom Ashto Shabar Melo Pesach Leis Dechavasu Bein Lohin Pesach Matzamor, and we read the reason of Pesach Matzamor. But that's about it. We pay primarily lip service to that opinion. Okay, but those two views in our Haggadah seem to be find their roots in really these two different stories as to what they were doing all night. Were you being Mesapi B'tzias Mitzrayim, or were you engaged in Limud Hilchos HaPesach? Is there a question over there, Sam? Okay. Now, with respect to the Manishtana, this is very interesting and maybe obvious. Perhaps one of the greatest misnomers in history is, I don't know how many, anybody here learned the Manishtana in Yiddish? In Yiddish?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah,
okay, so when I went to a very firm yeshiva katanas, I still remember Tata Chil Defregin Defir Kashas. Okay, when I asked the four questions. Now I don't know when the term four questions originated, but that's
only
it's only one question number one. Okay, there aren't four questions. Now the question is who asked the Manishtana. So you all know. I don't know how many of you are youngest, but you all know that the youngest one in the family asks him. When you read the Mishnah, that's not what the Mishnah says. It says, V'kan ha-bein shoel, and if the bein doesn't know, then his father, and then aviv melamdo, manishtan ha-layla zemikal leos, which in effect means it's not really even a question. It's simply the father, if the child can't ask, the father says to him, okay, listen, let me tell you how this night is different from other nights. And this night, there are going to be four differences to look for. You will find Rishonim who still adhere to that opinion, that the Manishtana is not stated by the child. The Manishtana is recited when the child doesn't know how to ask. The Rambam already here, but I think, I don't remember what the Shahal appears in Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam already has that... Okay. But nonetheless, the original use of the Manishtana was actually the role of the adult. In fact, there's a Gemara there where Abaye, I forget what it is, the Gemara Misachim has Abaye makes some very sharp comment. And Rabbah, who was his stepfather, says, Ah, Kvar Patrasan Milomer Manishtana. You pater us for having to say Manishtana. Manishtana is the attempt to engage the child. It's not the role that the child plays. Okay, we haven't engaged the child in a different way. Fine. Anyway, but that's what the Manishtana was originally. With respect to the The Arba Banim, can I get, I'm sorry?
The Shulchan Aruch said, it seems like somebody does have to ask.
No, is it the child, or is it...
No, somebody, he says, Kedeshi, you, Bozulo Miyad Kosheni, Kedeshi Shalat Tinokos, Lama Shotim Kosheni Kodim Suda, Yvain Chachma Vibain Aviv Milando, Im Elo Bain Ishto Shoalto.
Okay.
Vimlav Hu Shoalot Atma.
Okay, continue.
Afilis Amiri Chachamim Sholim Zelazem Manishtana Vachula.
Okay. So he's following the Rambam's position there, effectively. Okay, so the point is the Rambam does stick to the original interpretation. The Chaber is following the Rambam, which is that Manishtana is when they don't ask. When they do ask, and then you answer, the answer is Avadim Hayidu L'Faro B'Mitzrayim. Okay, now, Kenegan Arba Banim Dibra Torah has a very interesting history. Some think that originally really was three, not four. There are three different nuschos of the Arba Banim. What's that? It's not his, it was known long before. There are three different versions of the Arba Banim. One is found in the Yerushalmi, one is found in the Mechilta, and one is found in the Haggadah. Okay, I don't know if there's anything in the Bavli. I don't remember it. I don't think so. Now, one notable difference, there are different orders, different psukim. What's called Tam in our Haggadah, Tam is the PC version, but the Yerushalmi and the Mechilta, I think, both have the term Tipesh. Okay, but that would be on PC. Of course, the change to being on PC is a long time ago. But one comment, even though I think you all know this, there's nothing like political correctness accompanied with Hamaratus. I recall once that someone sent an email, someone from the liberal Jewish community sent an email about, you need certain kind of changes in the Haggadah because we don't sanction child beating because it says Afata Hake Yashinav. Okay? But Hake Yashinav does not mean belt them in the teeth. It means cause him to grit his teeth. Maybe they would also not like that either because we have to be too nice to children. But anyway, a Hake Yashinav means to make him grit his teeth, not to strike them. So Haggadah is not encouraging us to beat our children, even if sometimes we'd like to, or our Talmidim, Rava wrote this, Talmido, Rav Max Pino. It's not what Haggadah is talking about. All right. Anyway, in terms of the Arba Banim, there is, I've said this before, so some of you know that this is going to come, and some of you might want to fall on the floor in shock. You know that, of course, the most greatest discussed issue, how many have heard this from me before? Is the Russia. Okay, why does it say, why is the Rasha different than the Chacham? Because after all, the Chacham says, the Chacham says, the Rasha says, Ma'avadazos lachem, lachem alalo, and yet the Chacham says, Asher tziva Hashem elokeinu eschem. So you have all sorts of terutzim. You've had, it might be one of the most written upon questions in the rabbinic literature throughout the ages. Now, the real simple answer to the question, as disturbing as it is, and it's clear when you look in the Yerushalmi, is that they had a different gears in the Pasuk. The Pasuk they had was not Eschem. If you look in the printed editions of the Yerushalmi, and maybe in the Chilt as well, it says Osanu, not Eschem. Now, there are those who've gone out of their way. I don't know if it was David Tzvi Hoffman, spent pages trying to demonstrate, no, that's not what the Gersa was. We know already, we saw earlier this year, Hashash Shalanu Cholek Al Sfarim Shalanu, and I spoke about that long, Rabbi Kiv Eger, you did this in intro, you've done this with me sometimes in Gemara. I will just point out one of the Makar I just came across, the Vilna Gaon and his Bir HaGran Shulchan Aruch in Simon Kuf Chav Tes and Eben HaEzer, and talking about Gittin, spelling of names. The Ramah, the Mechaber quotes from Ran and Chulin about Kedar LaOmer, where the Gemara talks about Kedar LaOmer, that it's not supposed to be written on two lines. They apparently had it as two words, Kedar LaOmer. It's a similar discussion, a lot of discussion about Basheva, but in the end, you're not supposed to write Kedar LaOmer b'shnei shritin, even though it's shnei tevos. If you look in Aris Sfarim, look in Parshas Lech Lecha, Kedar LaOmer is one word. So the Gra just writes there, Harbei Plugtos Yesh Bein Hashas Bein Hamasara. Okay, so you can add the Gra to the reputable list of Gedolei HaAchronim who were well aware, and they didn't lose that much sleep over the fact that the Sifrei Masorah are different than the Sfarim that Chazal had in front of them. David? Okay, so that's the apologetics, but there's really no need to... I'm not arguing that it's more correct. I'm just arguing that this aspect of the Haggadah, this particular theme, is based upon a different girsa. That's all. I'm not arguing which is the correct. I'm not arguing that we should write that in our Sifrei Torah. That's not my argument. I'm not arguing that that was the, I'm not even arguing here that, that was the only girsa. Whenever we talk about these things, Kedar LaOmer, I wouldn't say that Chazal had the girsa of Kedar LaOmer and no other girsa existed then. I can't argue that for sure. Now, the assumption, by the way, however, is true. The Rashba and Atshuva, which was corrupted in the Chashai's quotation, he would probably say, not in that context, because that's only Agada, if it were Halachic Drasha, even though it's possible other versions existed, he would say you change it to match that, because that must have been a very serious Girsa. So you could, I'm not even arguing what you're saying isn't possible. That's the kind of answers that are given. But it's not out of the question, and one doesn't have to theologically eliminate it from your plate to say, oh, that that wasn't the Girsa that we had. So, is it definitely so? Is it vade provable? No. Is it likely? Yeah, much more likely than any other teretz that's ever been given. Okay. Anyway, fine. So you have that business of Arabanim. Then you have, obviously, Arami Yovei Ravi. I mentioned already that that you don't have the drush, that you don't have those drushers anywhere else. In terms of the Sifrei has a little bit of material in Arami Yovei Ravi, but you don't have very much. One comment just about the grammar of that first pasuk, Arami Yovei Ravi, it's obviously an issue that's perplexed people for a long time, what is going on there. This is a classic example where the Bali Masorah follow, in putting a trup on the words, are following Chazal, or a certain interpretation within Chazal, as opposed to perhaps what we would argue is pshat in the psukim. Probably the best pshat, modern linguistics aside of Yaakov T. Mecklenburg and whoever else wanted to suggest all sorts of Arabic binyanim for Oveid, probably the best reading of that is Arami Oveid Avi, a wandering Aramean was my father. It's not clear it refers to Avraham, it refers to Yaakov. Not that an Arami did something about destroying my father, but the word Oveid in the Binyan Kal means to wander or to stray, like Toet. And probably the way it should have read with the trop was Arami, Oveid, Avi, Mapach Pashta together, and Avi is sort of the apposition.
Explaining the Avi,
yeah. I think we would call it an appositive, I think. So Arami, Oveid, Avi. My father was a wandering Aramean. However, Chazal understood that Bikesh Lavan Lakar Sakol, that Lavan somehow tried to destroy, even though the grammar is awkward, and therefore the Bali Masorah in their trop have Arami Pashta, Oveid, Avi, Murasa Kev Katon, to put those two words together in line with that interpretation. I think in the Ksava Kabbalah, that's from Mecklenburg, he suggests that there's an Arabic binyan Polel, or Polel, which this corresponds to. I don't think there's a need to go down that route, which means, and that will explain why it's a strange-looking binyan. It's not a participle of the binyan Kal, but it's actually a perfect of binyan Polel. Okay. I don't object to the use of linguistics in this case, but I think that the Ibn Ezra solution, the Ibn Ezra's interpretation, is the pshat. But anyway, clearly the Balei HaGadah are using the interpretation the way, in the same interpretation that the Balei Masorah are incorporated in there. I don't know what, I assume that the interpretation of the Balei HaGadah is what's driving, in fact, the choice to place the trap as it was placed. Amitai.
Dr. Steiner actually has an article on this question. He has problems with all the other solutions and with Mecklenburg as well. He proposes that it's a pun on the Aramaic.
What's wrong with Ibn Ezra?
Not sure. I have the article.
What did Ibn Ezra say?
Except for it doesn't follow with the trup, but that's, I think the trup reflects interpretation.
What did Ibn Ezra say?
He says that it's Arami Oveid Avi, I think, if I'm not mistaken. That's since he's the one. What caused them to? Oh, okay. That's a separate question there. But I'm telling you, beware, when you're reading the Haggadah, that's the way it's being interpreted. The Pshat may be a little bit different. And I'll just say, once, Kevan Shigan al-Dvarim, obviously, what is the reason? How did Lavan cause Yaakov to go down to Mitzrayim? Let's take for granted Lavan tried to kill Yaakov. Let's assume he wants to try him. That's fine, but how does that correlate to his going down to Mitzrayim? Come on, you all must have come across the obvious answer. Shlomo, you say it. He might even say it. Oh, okay. I didn't need to say it Lachor Sakol. I just think it's obvious by the fact that he caused Yaakov to have multiple wives. It was that friction between his children that led to them going out to Egypt. That I thought, without I didn't need. What's that? I don't need the gematria. I just speak Lachor Sakol. It wasn't necessarily one of intent, but it was Laban's trickery that led to the strife in Yaakov's family that caused them to go down to Egypt. Okay. Is there anything else? I'm sorry? What's that? Okay. Let me tell you.
Question that might be okay to everyone now.
Yes.
You guys are closing down the dorms. Is it possible to sell comics that's eating dorms?
What? Why can't you sell comics?
Since whoever you sell it to won't have access to it.
I assume that my assumption is I haven't thought about it, but that the mashgiach of the yeshiva has been selling chametz for years. They've been closing down the dorm for years on Pesach. It's not a new thing. So I assume if it was okay in the past, it's okay now. Yeah. What the basis is, I can't tell you. I haven't thought about the question. No, I understand. Guys go to. I assume guys, even guys in the dorm, go and sell the chametz. My assumption is Ozzy. Yes. Doesn't hurt, you can sell it, but I the truth is, oatmeal is almost vade. In the state it's in, it, even if you have that oats can become chametz, it's almost come out vade, not chametz. If you came to me after Pesach and said you hadn't sold it, I'd tell you you could eat it. So, you can have in mind all tonight that it's sold if you like. I don't think so. I don't think, yeah, your parents are not selling chametz. It's a question whether or not, Who has the rishus over that? Your stomach, chal shulchan, and the stomach. They have in mind to sell your chametz too. But no, I don't think you need the guy's brush if it's just oatmeal. No, I don't. David. What, at the beginning of this year?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna. Not that it's anything wrong with me on.